is basically our point guard, two guard, guarding their power forward, and he says, get that out of here. Brown with two stands down onto the Kumpo. 5 remaining. Tatum drives down.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Celtics Pulse, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. I'm here today with Cody and we are going to be covering some of the matchups going on with the Celtics for the future, looking at the playoff picture as well as recent performances by Gordon Hayward and starting to show that that needle is pointing in the right direction for the Boston Celtics. Before we get going, I do want to give a shout out to Podcoin. You can now find us on Podcoin, which is a new podcast app where you earn coins for listening to your favorite podcasts. You can exchange these coins for gift cards and save them up for larger prizes. It's definitely worth checking out, guys. Just give it a go. It's perfectly sensible. Definitely give it a shot. It's an amazing app. Why not? If you're going to be listening to some awesome pods, might as well make a little bit of something out of it. Today, starting it off, we had Gordon Hayward go off with that 9-for-9 performance. Cody, what are your thoughts on Gordon Hayward lately? He seems to be really cooking.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing early on in the season was it was going to take some time. And then when, after 2 weeks, Gordon wasn't what Gordon Hayward was in Utah, shit hit the fan. Everyone in Boston, as we normally do, said, this guy's bad, blah, blah, blah. We didn't give him time. And I said this multiple times. He didn't have nearly as much time to come back from injury like Paul George did. So to expect him to put up what Paul George put up when he got back. And Paul George didn't even do really well when he got back. Paul George basically had a whole year and then like only played like 6 games at the end of 2014, 2015. So Gordon's finally coming back and you see it. I mean, the other night, 9-for-9, which was incredible. He had a tough end one that I got the rest. I was watching the Red Sox game, but I caught like the end of the second half of that game. And, you know, I saw him do his thing. And, I mean, he's just confident again. You know, the leg doesn't bother him as much. He went through an entire 82-game season without re-injuring it, without basically staying healthy all year. I mean, the only time he rested was for, like, a rest day or, like, a nick or knack here or there.
Or the concussion.
The concussion was the injury he sustained. But other than that, it was all rest days and just nick knack, whatever.
Yeah, and going into the whole the stats side of it too with Gordon Hayward's recent performance, we're going to go into stats season right now. He's the first player since 1986 to notch a perfect game from the bench for the Celtics. That's a minimum of 8 or more shots. He's the first Celtic since Kendrick Perkins in 2009 to go 8-for-8 or more on 8-plus shots. And he's also the third Celtic in history to do so, joining Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale to do it off the bench. And also on top of that, Celtics are now 6-0 when Hayward scores at least 20 points.
Yeah, I mean, he's important. I mean, we haven't seen a healthy Hayward until basically after the All-Star break. And after the All-Star break, and every year, every month, he's gotten better, whether it be percentages, whether it be scoring. Every stat seems to just go up and up and up and up and up. And we're starting to see, he might not be Utah Gordon quite yet. I mean, next year or the year after, hopefully we get that guy that we paid for. But right now, having him on the bench and being that Manu Ginobili type player, which he's been doing basically, it's great for this team. And it really helps, especially with how frustrating the second unit has been. And it's been quite highlighted here on this podcast and everywhere else, that the second unit is frustrating as hell sometimes to watch. He just brings balance to that, and he's been doing exactly what we asked him to do, exactly what we need him to do, and that's just do, you know, his thing.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that too is with the Celtics getting in rhythm. They're starting. I feel like we keep doing this where like we keep going this back and forth. We're like the Celtics are finally like they're turning that corner. And it's like now it's now or never, like they're turning the corner, and if they aren't, like they're going to get their asses whooped in the playoffs. But, right. I mean, they ripped off a 112-102 win over Miami, and that's actually, as much as it was a close game, it was a really important mark in the season because you had for the first time this season, you have Gordon, Kyrie, and Al getting 20 or more points together. That is a huge, huge indication of where this team is going, I think. Touching on the fact where you were saying that Hayward is helping stabilize that bench unit, because you have Hayward coming back from this injury and you're kind of nursing him in slowly, giving him more time, giving him more minutes, I think the Celtics kind of have to lean into that advantage that they have there, because you've had this all-star level player coming off the bench while he's recovering from this injury, and now you've got all of this amazing depth at the wing spot. And I think, honestly, that makes them one of the more daunting matchups in the playoffs, because what second unit is going to be able to go against Gordon Hayward?
Yeah, exactly. And all these championship teams that we see, you know, even with the Warriors and how stacked their starting five is, whatever, having that player on the bench, or having that those two players on the bench to just come in and just do what they do. Every championship team has that. Like I said, Manu. Manu was part of basically a part of four, but basically was playing regular for three of those first championships. And he was one of the most important players on that court, even with Tim Duncan and Tony Parker. And every year you have, you know, a player on the bench, like the Warriors bench with Andre Iguodala, who ended up starting in 2015, but coming off the bench after that when Kevin Durant came through. He's been a vital part of that. And you know, every team has that bench guy, and you need a deep bench. And, you know, even though it hasn't really shown a lot this year, we have one of the deepest benches in the league. Just that Terry makes you want to throw my head against a window and, you know, whatever. But when you're having Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier and Aaron Baines, depending on what lineups they go with, Marcus Morris, all those guys potentially off the bench, I mean, you could make a case that the Celtics have nine starters. They just don't have nine starting slots. That's a big reason.
Yeah, and I think that it leads to some of the chemistry issues they've had this year. Is a matter of figuring out how all these guys fit together, because in a lot of situations, you can have probably five or six different starting lineups just based on the talent that you have. I will say the big crucial things for a deep playoff run is going to be Horford and Baines' health, because right now those are the two best bigs you've got in terms of being able to play the four and five together in tandem successfully. And Gordon Hayward was saying it recently, I think after a game, it's going to start with their defense. They have to bring that defensive intensity, because that's the Brad Stevens system relies on that. It relies on being able to get back in transition, play good transition defense. And, you know, you have to make those passes, get those right shots. And apparently they started breaking down every single Celtics player's shot selection into good looks, pretty good looks, and then bad shots. And apparently, Horford's only taken, 19 bad shots the entire year.
Yeah, they break it down between good shots for their skill set, and then bad shots. And, yeah, Horford only had, 17, 19, and, 700-something shots. It's ridiculous.
It's absurd how important he is. People really underrate how important he is, and I think it's like this annual thing where we're like, oh yeah, Horford's pretty good. He's not worth the contract he's got. And then we get to the playoffs and he flips the switch. And it's why it's so important to keep him healthy, give him the rest that he needs. Managing his minutes is so crucial for this team, because, you know, if you look at the top three biggest threats in the East, even if you look at the matchup with the Pacers, you know, you've got Miles Turner, who's an up and coming young big, who's very, very skilled, able to stretch the floor. You have that same issue with Embiid. And then with Giannis, I mean, you've just got one of the most physically dominant bigs in the league, who's just built like a tree, man. He's just a beast. Yeah. Yeah. For Horford to be able to go against those guys at his age is just impressive. And, I mean, I imagine that's physically draining. So we have to manage his minutes as much as possible.
And like you said, Horford's health. I mean, Horford, in my opinion, Kyrie Irving's obviously the best player on the team, but I believe that Al is the most valuable player on the team. And I mean, I feel like if Al was hurt last postseason and we had Kyrie, I don't think we'd get past the Bucks. I really don't. I mean, maybe probably the Bucks, but I feel like the 76ers series would be a lot closer. That's just how important Al Horford is, like you mentioned. He's been playing lights out the last month or two of the season. Like, I kind of want to look back and just, like, his, like, last 6 weeks or so, because he's been on a tear.
He has been on a tear. Watching him in that indie game was also really big, too. Yeah. He took a couple amazing shots.
Exactly. And then, obviously, Aaron Baines being back and being healthy and playing the 15-plus minutes that, statistically, we need him to play. That's going to be huge. And just make, like I said, I'm still open to donoring a foot if they need it. And I don't care about my feet. I care about Aaron Baines' feet more. But keeping him, because especially if we match up with it, we most likely will match up against Indiana in the first round. We're going to start probably Baines and Horford like we've been doing the last few days when they have two big men. Because having Baines, having Horford, it's going to neutralize Sabonis and neutralize Turner on the glass. And having both of them is going to be crucial. And then we can mix and match our lineups against Milwaukee and Toronto or Philadelphia or whoever we end up playing whenever we end up playing them.
I'm kind of wondering if they're going to bring in another big. Because, I mean, they've been talking about it before, and we obviously know the news that Moose, unfortunately, my man Greg Monroe, signed with Philly for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. On top of that, you've got Thomas Robinson, still down in your G League affiliate in Maine, or up in your G League affiliate in Maine. So I think personally he would be a good guy to bring up, even just for big depth, just to potentially have another guy to throw out there. I don't know what kind of damage he's going to do, but I feel like in a situation where you're going against, you know, a four like Thad Young, I feel like Robinson would play really well against him. That's just a personal opinion of mine. I just think they just need to add another big to that lineup just to make sure that they've got another young guy who can run the floor. I don't know what the deal has been with Rob Williams, but we really haven't seen him in a while. I feel like he's been dealing with like some kind of like back contusion or something like that. He just disappeared for a long time. I don't know if that's intentional, if they're working on him with the shot selection, or if there's bigger health concerns, or if they're just trying to tighten up that playoff unit, get a 9 or 10 man rotation and just roll with it.
Yeah, I feel like he probably has like a nick and they're just going to let him just rest it out. Thomas Robinson would be interesting. Right before we signed Monroe, I was really thinking about Thomas Robinson because he brings rebounding, and for the last like 8 years, I've just been screaming at the Celtics to get a bargain rebounder. Like, oh my god. Like, it's clear that we really need rebounding help, even with the team we have. Other than Baines, who's our only like reliable rebounder. Like, Horford obviously is documented with rebounding struggles, and the list goes on. But having Thomas Robinson, I think, would help because of how dominant a rebounder he is. Even though he's a lot shorter than your prototypical four, he's like 6'8", 6'7", he still gets boards. Another one would be interesting. I don't think we'd go that way, but Luke Richard, Mbah Mute was just released today. And that could be sort of that stretch four guard multiple position guys if you want something like that. You know, to guard a Kawhi, guard a Giannis. I'm not 100% sure.
Is he? I think the big reason why he got cut, from what I heard, was that he had a knee injury. I think he had knee surgery, and that's the reason why the Clippers cut him. I think the problem is with the playoff eligibility thing, too. So I don't think he would have been eligible for the playoffs for us, unfortunately. That's the good thing with Thomas Robinson, and that's why I do think that the Celtics do have intentions of bringing him up. Similar to how like the Celtics were getting dogged last year, we're like, bring Bird onto that playoff roster. I think it's going to happen with T-Rob just because they do need bigs. He is a guy who's known to get rebounds. He's an undersized big, but a guy who's capable of getting boards. We've seen a lot of that with Al Horford, but like you said, Horford isn't necessarily the best rebounder in the world. But you need bodies. That's really what it comes down to. And God forbid something happened to Baines or Horford, and now you're really, really in a spot. So I think because of his playoff eligibility, because of where he is in the system, the fact that they're giving him time down in Maine to try and get his legs under him, trying to get used to the similar system, I could see him coming up pretty soon. Just because the thing with the G League, with the Red Claws, They run like the same exact offense that they run with the Celtics. It's like the same playbook. It's the same, you know, roles that they have. And it's a really interesting way for them to go about developing players and trying to include players onto their, you know, G League affiliate versus their actual main club. So I'm hoping he makes it, just because, as you were saying, I've been calling for him to get signed by the Celtics for like over a year at this point. I mean, he was way back when they were talking about trading Rondo to the Kings. He was one of the guys who was rumored to be coming back in a trade. So he's, you know, he's not the guy that he was drafted to be, definitely. But maybe if you put him in the right spot, he can still contribute and have a role with the team. But
yeah, big hustle guy, and especially in the playoffs. And remember our identity from last year that has somewhat eluded us this year. You know, that just grit and grind, you can get it done, hustle out of everything. I mean, especially a player of his motor anyway, getting what could be his quote-unquote last chance for a championship contender in the playoffs, that dude would be off the walls. He would be getting every single rebound. He'd be getting rebounds during halftime. That's how, like, hard he would go. So
the guy's got a chip. You know, guy's got a chip on his shoulder, like, and he's got something to prove. It's the biggest platform to do it.
Yeah, like you said, he wasn't what he was drafted to be, which was a number 5 overall game-changing big man. And in Kansas, he was that guy. I mean, I remember that's when I first started really getting into college basketball and that championship team. I actually remember watching that game with strep throat. That sucked. But anyway, I digress. You know, like I said, he's a motor guy. I love Thomas Robinson in college because he just got rebounds. He was just big. He was athletic. He did his thing. And like I said, add that on top of potentially the last chance he could of making the league. An audition. You saw Bismack Biyombo had a 2 good playoff games, and he got $4,000,000. So it's not even a number. That's how much money he got paid for just getting a 20 rebound game. You know, like rebound. You know, energize the rest of the Celtics. I mean, Marcus Smart doing it all the time, I feel like makes the Celtics numb a little bit, because it's like, you know, in years past, Marcus would dive on the ball and we feed off. And now it's like, well, that's expected of Marcus. It doesn't really get the guys riled up like it normally does. So seeing someone else do it, I feel like would rekindle that fire and rekindle that let's just do it and play how we play, you know? So yeah, I feel like, yeah. And plus, like I said, adds the rebound that we need, adds a big man to our rotation. I just feel like it's almost too perfect.
Yeah, and I mean, think going into the whole situation with Indy, you know, you're coming off a 20-point win. I don't think this part can be, you know, understated any more than it already is, but they ripped off a 20-point win against Indiana on the road in their building. You know, it was a closer game towards the beginning of it, and I certainly didn't expect it to be such a gap towards the end, but, you know, you drop a 20-point win on them, and now at this point, the Celtics either have to win their next game or the Pacers, who are currently facing off against the Nets, have to lose in order for you to clinch the fourth seed. Bare minimum, you could be the fourth seed, which means you got home court through the first round. If the Celtics win the next two games and the 76ers lose their next two games, you end up jumping up as far as third seed. So, you know, it's really important that the Celtics close out the season, not just because in terms of win sense, but to just do well, to get that momentum you need and to really start gelling, just because they've got all this momentum they're building on right now, and there's just no reason for them to slow down. You know, I want to see how the bench runs with Hayward. You know, I've been trying to advocate for him to start, but, I mean, he's really stabilized that bench unit, so why not? And I also do think Orlando is a bigger test than people are really giving them credit for. They've won 11 of their last 17 games, and right now they're just pushing really hard for a playoff spot. And I also do think that with the way that they're structured, just the amount of just raw talent they have at the 4 and 5, they've got a lot of length. It's just a matchup nightmare for the Celtics, just because, as we talked about before, they've got two really good, dependable, standard big men in Horford and Baines. I think this matchup is really a good warm-up for what they're going to have to deal with the Bucks, just because even with the Bucks' injuries right now, they're still one of the bigger teams in the league. And it also gives them a little bit of a warm-up when they're going to be going against Toronto, if that ever comes to fruition, just because Toronto is one of those teams that has, you know, you've got Gasol there. And on top of that, you know, it's always difficult for them to get rebounds against the Raptors and against the Bucks. Those are just two teams they've always struggled with against the boards. So it's going to be a good warm-up for them. And I just want to see what's going to happen, especially with, you know, you're going to have Indy going against you on your home court for the first round. And that's another series where you're going against these young bigs.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, Orlando's beat us a couple times. First home game, second home game of the year, and earlier on during the middle of the winter. So, I mean, in Orlando, I were like my sleeper team to make the playoffs, and I like their roster construction. So we'll have to see.
I saw some slander online earlier talking about like Vucevic, and it's like Vucevic has taken his team to the playoffs, but Anthony Davis has failed to do so. It's like we need to start a dialogue.
Yeah, I remember Vucevic was kind of like a dream scenario trade piece to target at the deadline. You know, I thought that depending on how Orlando was doing, might want to just for a 1 year rental for Vucevic. I thought he would have been perfect for the Celtics.
I still think he's a perfect fit for the Celtics. It's just his money is just a problem, and that's really what it comes down to. And it's like the most frustrating thing for me, because when I really started to get into the Celtics was around the time where we were nearing the end of the Big Three era. And they were looking at this rebuild and how they were going to be able to do everything. You know, I was looking at every trade situation left and right. I'm like, okay, how do we get Josh Smith to come to Boston to play with Rondo? Or like, oh, like, how do we go and get like Omer Asik or like, yeah, just like the, like name like a random NBA player that was like, oh, this guy's looking to get out of this situation. Like, I'm like, how did the Celtics get him? Like, let's go. So I've come to learn a lot about the salary cap, and it's just like, every single time like a random trade situation is thrown out, it's just like complete disregard for the money situations. It's what makes the NBA so interesting to me, is being able to like look at it from the situation being like, okay, like how many guys can you sign? Who can you keep? Who can you trade away? What can you get to make your system work? And how do you maximize your roster with what you got? Like the Celtics going into this summer because of Horford's contract situation, because of Kyrie's contract situation, there's a lot of maneuvering they can do to go and add another star, still keep Horford, still re-sign and max Kyrie. So, you know, it's very exciting right now at this point of the year, because like we're almost to the playoffs, which is one of my favorite times of the year. Then we get the draft lottery, then we get the draft, and we got free agency. So it's just going to be – it just steamrolls right into the summer. And honestly, it makes July 4th like even more amazing. Like the whole weekend leading into 4th of July is just – absolutely amped up energy for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, I love it too. So,
other than that, is there anything else you want to cover today, Cody?
I want to see where your head's at with this. So, this weekend, I'm not sure if you've heard, and by that I mean I know you've heard. Our good friend Paul Pierce made a bold statement, I would say. And I love Paul. He's probably my favorite Celtic that I got to watch. He said that he had a better career than Dwayne Wade has. I disagree. I love Paul, and everyone talking, you know, Paul as an analyst has sort of become a meme at this point. But I do not think he has a better career than Dwayne Wade. I think a lot of people are shitting on Paul Pierce more than they should, which I just think that's just uneducated kids looking at Dwayne Wade and not realizing that Paul Pierce was that dude.
But I think it has to do with the fact that like you were saying, like we're in the day and age where it's like everyone who's on Twitter is like some 12-year-old like LeBron stan or Kobe stan who just has a beef against Boston. Like a lot of people who are really vocal online aren't fans of the Celtics. And certainly aren't fans of Pierce. And I mean, like, Pierce has got that attitude, right? Like you said it yourself. He was that guy. He was that dude.
You can walk into a building with Jesus Christ, and he's still the greatest thing in that building. Like, that's how Paul.
I mean, he's tough as nails too. I mean, like an understated thing, and like people reminded me of it the other day. I mean, he still had that time where he got stabbed 12
dude
times.
Stabbed, and then 2 days later, dropped 40. Like, dude,
he's a beast, man. I love the story where it was Meta World Peace. I think it was Meta World Peace ended up pantsing him and like tried to like pull his shorts down like mid game. Uh-huh. And Pierce like ended up grabbing his pants, like pulled him back up, got the ball and just drained a three in his face. Just absolutely just got a bucket right in his grill. And like, it's just an epitome of like the kind of player that Pierce is. Now, in terms of the whole Dwayne Wade, Paul Pierce debate, I'm obviously going to cape for Paul Pierce. Like, I'm going to cape for him. I think if you're going off titles, yeah, it has to be Dwayne Wade. Like, that's a given. Mm-hmm. But I do think part of that, too, is you have to look at, like, where they are statistically in terms of, you know, how high are they in scoring. I mean, right now, Paul Pierce is second in all time for the Celtics. He's up there for three-point shooting.
Oh, he's first, isn't he? Didn't he pass Havlicek?
I don't think he did. I think if he did, I am unaware of that.
I'll double check. I'm probably wrong.
But I mean, he's so high up on the Celtics all-time scoring list. He's up there for three-pointers. For a majority of his career, he didn't have like anyone. Like, he dragged a team to go against the Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, like,
It is Havlicek. He is second. My bad. He is second.
It is okay. And I mean, like that team that he dragged to the Eastern Conference Finals, like, the two or three best team players on there were, like, you had young Joe Johnson before Joe Johnson was Joe Johnson, and, like, Antoine Walker, and, like, Tony Delk.
Yeah.
And, like, Anderson. Like, so, like, they didn't have a lot of guys to build around him for a long time. And people were like, oh, yeah, like the big three era, like they only won one championship. First off, they won one championship the very first year, the very season that they got put together. It's probably one of the fastest young championship teams ever.
Yeah, which is a lot harder to do than people give it credit for.
Way more difficult. It's so underrated. Like people were worried about the Warriors being able to do that, and they had an absurd amount more talent. And the thing was, you look at the age of the players that they were acquiring. They got Ray Allen coming off that big knee injury, still recovering from that, for the fifth overall pick in the draft, plus some other assets. And then you went and got KG. All three of those players were over the age of 30 when you got them. So, like, for people to be like, oh, yeah, like, they only won one championship. I'm like, yeah, because they were, like, towards, like, the tail end of their primes. Like, they... Like, the big argument that I have is if, and this is, I think, where Pierce is coming from, too, is, you know, if he had the talent that Dwayne Wade had around him, you know, he would have won as many championships, if not more. I mean, okay, Dwayne Wade went 2-2. This is a tweet I put up earlier. Dwayne Wade went 2-2 with prime LeBron James and prime Chris Bosh. They lost to a Mavericks team they had no business losing to. They had no business losing to that Mavs team. They got punked by freaking Jason the Jet Terry, okay? You got punked, okay? Like, they should not have lost that series.
Yeah, no, that was
they won. They won back-to-back championships. There's no doubting that. They went to four straight finals. As soon as LeBron left Miami, Miami missed the playoffs. Like, you know, it's just hard for me to, like, look at the Celtics situation in comparison, like, how Pierce was built around versus Dwayne Wade. Like, they went out, like, Miami went out and got Shaq. And granted, it wasn't Shaq in his prime, but it was Shaq towards the tail end of his prime. He still had some freaking gas in the tank, and he went out and won a championship with him. You know, like, no, like, at the end of the day, it is rare that you ever see any superstar go out and win a championship by himself. But Miami did a better job building around Dwayne Wade for almost the entirety of his career than the Celtics did for Pierce. Because for a long time, the Celtics had terrible management and terrible coaching for a really long time. And they had brutal events happen in like the late 80s and early 90s. Everything that happened with Bias, everything that happened with Lewis, it screwed their entire future up. And granted, I don't think it's an excuse. And I think when it comes down to it, the argument between Pierce and Wade is a lot closer than people say. I'm going to cape for my guy because he's my guy. Like, I'm always going to be saying Paul Pierce is better. But I still think Dwayne Wade, like, even in the conversation where Pierce was saying this stuff, like, he was like, yeah, he's the third best shooting guard of all time. You know, like, you know who the first two are. It's MJ and it's Kobe. So the fact that it's that short of a conversation, you know, like, it's not like it was disrespect. Like, you asked the guy an honest question about himself and you expect him to not be biased. Like,
the truth serum.
Listen to Kobe, man. Like, they had Kobe on, like, what was it? Freaking James Corden or something like that. They had him on, like, late night TV and was like, hey, rate yourself, like, MJ and LeBron, I think it was, for the, like, who's the best player. And it's like, you can either do that, or you could, like, eat, like, a bull testicle or something like that. Yeah. It's like, what do you expect the dude to do?
Yeah, I know. Like,
oh, no, it was a cow tongue.
Yeah, cow tongue, yep.
Like, I don't know, like, you're asking, like, one of those guys who was, like, one of the most notorious shit talkers to give an honest opinion about himself versus another player. A guy that he went against, he despised, a guy he saw dislocate his teammate's elbow in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you want him to give an honest, unbiased opinion? Like, what the fuck are you asking for? Like, you know exactly what he's going to say. You knew what he was going to say before that. It's just ESPN fuel to the fire. Like, this is just what they do. It mainly just pisses me off, mostly because, as you were saying, you know, you've got all these guys on Twitter who are just like, oh, fucking Paul Pierce, like, talking all this shit. And I'm like, dude, like, you never even watched the guy play. Yeah. Like, I watched him play, and, like, even then, like, I didn't fully appreciate it until I got older.
Yeah, exactly.
Pierce is an absolute G. He's an OG, man. You don't see them very often. And Dwayne Wade is too, don't get me wrong. But, like, you know, you can have a disagreement and say, like, a player is better than another player and be like, it's just based in sentiment. Like, I think Dwayne Wade's a great player, but I'm always going to cape for Pierce because Pierce is my guy. Pierce is, you know, he embodies what the Celtics organization is. Like, I'm always going to back that dude. Like, that's just what it is. And that's based in emotion. Like, that's 100% based in emotion. That's what most sports takes are, you know? So, like, if you go about it thinking that way, then it just makes a lot of more sense when it comes down to having, like, arguments about, like, who's better, like, who's best, like, who's the greatest player of all time. Like, it's always based in sentiment and feeling.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like you said, people who didn't really watch, like, Pierce's basically first 7-8 years, even probably maybe 9 years, or more or less, definitely not what he had at the end of his career with Boston. I mean, like, the first, like, 7-8 teams, they were like, ugh, these teams weren't really that great. It was him and Walker, and then, like, everybody else, basically. You know, you had the Eastern Conference Finals team, and then, you know, the battles with the Pacers, and, you know, stuff like that, and just, like, you really don't appreciate how cold-blooded. And you could argue that Dwayne Wade, like, Pierce put up better numbers than Wade did, and Wade was probably the better basketball player. Like, Pierce wasn't that athletic.
No.
Like, he was athletic enough, but if you really sit down and watch Paul Pierce's game, he's probably one of the most fun offensive players to ever watch, because every move was so calculated, every move was so difficult. He had to make the perfect step to get by guys or give himself enough space, and he did every night, multiple times a night. He was such a smart player. But I don't know. I feel like in Dwayne Wade's case, Dwayne Wade's like a top 25, top 20 player. Like, I have him, like, I think 25 all the time.
And Pierce is probably top 30, I think.
Yeah, Pierce probably, like,
top 30, top 40.
35 to 40 range for me.
I think that's perfectly acceptable, especially considering the fact that he doesn't have the hardware that a lot of other guys have. I mean, he's got 10 All-Star appearances, you know?
I mean, like, Dwayne Wade has, like, the 15 All-Stars and, like, the 10 All-NBAs. And, like, I feel like at their prime, like, I feel like Wade's career was a lot better if you look at, like, just him at his peak. Because, like, peak Dwayne Wade's was insane. And then I feel like also a lot of people look at that 2006 Finals and how he basically put up the greatest Finals ever. And I feel like that fluffs them up a bit. But, like, you know, I feel like it is a lot closer than people give it credit.
And I think it's a lot of it, too, has to depend on LeBron versus Pierce. And I think, you know, even LeBron says it for, like, a 5-year period, Paul Pierce was, like, the biggest rival to him. Like, he's the reason why he left Cleveland.
Yeah, Paul Pierce is the biggest rival. I mean, he couldn't beat Paul. Paul just legit, every single time he needed to, he showed up and beat LeBron.
Underrated layer to the whole All-Star thing is, I saw this on Twitter, one of the guys I follow was posting about it. the thing with his All-Star voting is, you think about it, for most of Paul Pierce's All-Star career, he was going against LeBron James. LeBron like was like automatically like an All-Star vote. Like it was just happening.
He was the biggest getter every year. I mean,
it was like him, and then like once Melo got traded to the Knicks, like
so
him
and Melo ran that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact
then
that
Paul
like
George started, then Paul George started coming up. And
he still got 10 All-Star votes. Like that's still very big. And I mean, you know, for him to be going against the greatest player of a generation, and for the player who, I mean, some people still think this, but I don't think it's the case now, but a player who was the greatest player on the planet for a significantly long stretch of time and was one of the main guys to oppose him, that has to earn you a little bit of merit there, too.
Yeah,
you know, I think Twitter loves Wade, not only because of Wade being a great player, but because he played with LeBron.
I feel like
LeBron win two championships and go to four straight finals together.
Yeah, it's the whole thing that everyone hates Paul Pierce because he kept on beating his favorite player in the playoffs.
It's part of it. I mean, like that's it's the same thing that like I feel towards LeBron. Like I respect LeBron and I respect Kobe, but like I don't like those guys. Like you know, I respect them both for like what they've contributed to the world of basketball. More specifically to LeBron, like what he's contributed to the world outside of basketball. But they're not guys that, like, I'm going to root for. Like, I'm going to be like, yeah, like, they're great. Like, I acknowledge greatness, but it doesn't mean you have to like it.
Exactly.
Well, other than that, is there anything else you want to throw out there, Cody?
I think that was my last talking point.
No, it was a good one. It was a good one. I'm glad you mentioned it, to be honest. I totally blanked. I was mainly focusing on the playoffs and everything with Hayward. But that has been a huge thing, and it's kind of been setting NBA Twitter on fire the past, like, four days. Yeah, everyone's been bugging about it, so. Well, everyone, thank you again for listening to an episode of Celtics Pulse. You are able to find us on Twitter at @Celtics_Pulse. Please give us a follow. Other than that, hope you guys have an awesome night. Let's gear up for the playoffs and go Celtics.